Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. Education. Cheryl Tuskin's our guest from the Frontier Institute. Cheryl's an education policy voice with that great nonprofit think tank. It's Montana-based and free market-oriented as well. We're going to talk about a court case, a recent ruling. This was in earlier in December. Lewis and Clark District Court Judge Mike Minahan has blocked implementation of Montana's first education savings account program for students with disabilities. This was created under a 2023 piece of legislation, House Bill 393. It's that called Students with Special Needs Equal Opportunity Act. And we'll talk about what the judge had found, you know, was problematic in that piece of legislation. Then move on to other education areas as well. Hey, Cheryl, good morning. How are you, ma'am?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Doing good. Happy New Year. Glad that you could share some time. And I have a lot of respect for the Frontier Institute and how you guys approach your work and your data. And so directing people there, you got a great education program you'll talk about, frontierinstitute.org. But let's start with this education savings account and why it's kind of backed up at the moment.
Yeah, so this is a really great program for students specifically with disabilities here in the state of Montana. It's great opportunity for funneling the dollars that are earmarked for those children into a private trust so that they can go and find the education and therapeutic services on their own apart from the public school system. Unfortunately, we've had a lot of issues with parents and being able to navigate the special education programs here within our public schools. And it's just a hard and heavy bureaucratic process. And so it's been operating for 2 years, just about a year and a half. It was implemented the summer of 2024. They took their first application period, started with only 14 students in the program, and then each application cycle, we've seen it grow significantly. So going into September, there were 75 students who were participating and really doing well with their education. And we have to talk about, like, what kind of students are participating in this. So there's a lot of children who are on the autism spectrum, where being in a classroom setting with a lot of noises, a lot of sensory overload is just not the best setting for them, where they get overwhelmed by the lights or the noise or the smells. Or the busyness. And so being able to take those dollars that were meant for educating them and then put it into a private, into a separate account, and then for the mom to provide their own setup for educating from home, either with online programs or tutors, or you can use the funds for private school, as well as taking care of those occupational therapy sessions, speech therapy, and then reimbursement for travel. Because, you know, in Montana, we are a very rural state. Sometimes you have to drive a lot of many miles between a small town to get to those specialists. So this was actually helping so many families make the difference in their kids' lives.
Yeah, and I am a fan of school choice here, and I think it does a lot of things. You know, public schooling, again, it's not a bad mark for public schooling, but to have school choice, I think, you know, new ideas into the fold, and there's energy behind it as well. So this ESA program would have allowed families to redirect per pupil state funding from their public school district to this account administered by the Office of Public Instruction. What did the district court judge find problematic here?
So what's really interesting is that he actually did not rule on the constitutionality of the program itself. He actually paused it based on a technicality on the way that the law was written and the funds were appropriated. And so there's a technicality there. So there's a couple options that could very easily fix fix this situation and reinstate the whole program. So they could have a special session. I don't think that would ever happen. But the next legislative session, make a couple adjustments, and just the wording of the way that they appropriate the funds would be the thing that really matters.
Yeah.
So he did not rule on the merits of the actual program or how it was structured, other than the way that like one or two sentences were written in as far as appropriating the funds was concerned, which is kind of, you know, something within our, you know, House Bill 2. So it's actually pretty hopeful for us, because he didn't rule and just throw it out and say, no, this doesn't align with the Montana Constitution. A couple little tweaks could make all the difference. And so what happened, he issued his ruling, and then the state of Montana requested a stay because there are 75 students who are taking, who had planned out their entire year. They have, you know, bought curriculum, they have made plans with tutors, or maybe they have online curriculum. They have their whole year mapped out, and the ruling said the entire program would be paused. So there were 41 new applications that just came in between November 1st and December 1st. We just had another application period. So all those applications will just be on pause. They will not process those. So that's very sad for those 41 students who are really hoping to change what they were doing this year and get onto the ESA starting this month in January.
For
the 75 others, the judge issued that all the payments would stop, which was incredibly sad because parents had, they had receipts that had been submitted to OPI, and they were ready to get that reimbursement, and he paused it all. So our state asked for a stay, which would be a pause on that ruling, to allow those 75 students to continue the program and continue receiving reimbursements for their educational expenses, and he granted that. So they can stay in the program, the 75 who are currently active, through June 30th, and I believe there is an appeal that is in process.
Cheryl Tuscan is our guest from Frontier Institute. She's the Education Outreach Coordinator. We're talking about a court case that has held up an education savings account program for children with disabilities. And it really opens up the door to a larger discussion about how these savings accounts fit into the conversation about education innovation in Montana and school choice. So we're going to get to that. But Cheryl, I want to back up a little bit. So this bill was enjoined, it was put on hold. I'll put it that way. There's probably a legal term for it. And then that put on hold was kind of adjusted so that the kids in the program now could continue without a major piece of disruption. So that's good. And as you noted earlier, the legality of it was sort of language about a constitutional appropriation process that can be easily fixed. But the broader discussion about education reform is much more difficult. Before we get to that, tell us where, these kids with disabilities, and as you noted, there's quite a range, I imagine, of what they consider disabilities, intellectual or behavioral, or even that autism schedule. What choices do they have? Where do they turn if they're not in public education?
Yeah, you know what? That's such a great, great thing to discuss. There are, in order to qualify for the special needs education savings account, you have to have been diagnosed with a disability as defined by the Individuals with Disabilities in Education Act. It's a federal law that is there to protect and provide a free and fair public education for children with disabilities. And it's very wonderful and it's awesome that we have those protections. And part of the process is, you know, determining that, they will go through the special education department at their local public school and get an individualized education plan or IEP. And there's a lot of different disabilities. There are 13, but the ones that we kind of hear about the most are autism spectrum disorder or severe behavioral disorders, dyslexia, dysgraphia. That doesn't look like a disability. I mean, these are normal kids, and they just learn in different ways. And so the bottom line is that we have to look at the individual child, and not every school setting is going to be the best setup for them. And that's what the IEP process is supposed to do, is to bring those, to give the helps and additional, structure to those students so that they can thrive. And for the most part, that helps a lot of students, and they're doing great. And there's a minority of students where that is still not enough. And it's just the better option is to go a different route. And there are private schools that are specifically for children with autism or children with learning disorders. There's a school here in Bozeman called Cottonwood Day School that actually helps students with disabilities. And so their whole setup is based on that. So it's really about looking at what the individual child needs and creating a path specifically for them.
And I have a note here about the estimated ESA value per student. I'm going to check that with you. Would be like $5,000 to $8,000 annually. So when you look at that, if there's 100 kids or even 200 kids in the program, that's like $80,000 for to administer this program. Is that true? Right. Are those figures true? And to me, that doesn't seem like an awful lot to, I guess, be crying over. Throwing lawsuits at if it's going to help kids with disabilities.
Right. And so it's really good to really understand what's truly going on here, because what we do hear from the education establishment is that this is robbing money from the public schools, that it's taking from them. But let's just set it up. Everyone pays their property taxes, and that goes to the public schools, and it goes into the general fund. We have our services, right, our police and fire. That the money that comes from my property taxes to my local school district, that continues to go. Now, when you enroll your child into that public school, they get that per pupil funding on top of it. And right now, we, on average, in the state of Montana, we are funding public schools at the amount of about $17,000 per student per year.
Yeah.
So the ESA for K through 8 grade, it's around that $5,800 to $6,500, depending on that school district. And then once you get into the high school range, it's about $8,000 of, and that's just the per pupil funding. Now, the biggest thing that I want everybody to understand is that schools don't have a right to the funding if they're no longer educating that child. So for me, we homeschooled our kids, and so they don't have a right to that per pupil funding anymore. So that, whatever, about $6,500 it would be for the city of Bozeman, that stayed in the general fund, and it did not transfer over to them. And so with this ESA, those schools are no longer educating those 75 students. And so they don't have a right to that per pupil funding. And what happens instead is that per pupil funding goes into an account, a trust held by the OPI. And also this ESA is the other thing that people will say is that this, we don't know where the money is. We don't know how much. We have no idea how it's being spent. That's absolutely on its face completely false. This program is the most transparent and accountable program of all of our government programs, because we know exactly what that per pupil funding is. It goes into a trust account. For those parents to be able to get reimbursed, they have to show a receipt and prove that this was an education-based item. And the parent handbook is very clear of what are allowable and non-allowable expenses. And so the OPI does not release a reimbursement until they've ensured that is actually an education expense.
Yeah.
So it's actually a fantastic program and very transparent.
And we're going to see some pushback. Again, Cheryl Tuscan is with us, Frontier Institute, the Education Outreach Coordinator, frontierinstitute.org. We talk with you guys. You guys do an awful lot of great work, Cheryl. So I thank you on your key focuses here. A lot of it's economy and property rights and then education, too. And I appreciate the education focus. Trying to get education reform across the finish line. And maybe you can talk from a national perspective on maybe there's some reform programs that are working really well. I know it's a process, and I know that those folks who are in public education are you know, just kind of circling the wagons and trying to protect their territory in a lot of ways. And we've got to educate, or you have got to educate, about the benefits to all for something like this. Let's go into that. Let's go into the overall need for education reform. What's working, and you know, it's received in some ways, rejected in others. But we're still, I think, early in this education reform industry.
You know, we're actually pretty far behind. Actually, I mean, we have had school choice policies really taking off for 30 years. Between the charter school movement and then scholarships for private schools and tax credit scholarships, and then the ESA programs that we're seeing across the country. We're actually, the state of Montana is actually way, way behind the current trend. So mm-hmm. right now there are 75 school choice programs on the books in 34 states. And parents want choice. When there's an organization called EdChoice, which gives fantastic data, and they poll annually every year and monthly the same questions of parents. And no matter what people's political backgrounds are, their socioeconomic status is, they, by and large, at a 70 to 85% rate, want school choice. They want options. The actual enrollment would change if people were no longer locked into their government-assigned public school zip code school. And if you unlocked and allowed the money to follow the student and allow the parents to decide, I want these dollars that are earmarked for my child's education to go to this school or that school, or to do a hybrid program at home, then parents are happy. Everybody's happy. And when you have that competition, what we see is that that the test scores improve in public schools, as well as the per pupil rates go up, and everybody starts thriving, and public schools offer new and interesting programs. And so competition is actually a really good thing when it comes to the students. The students thrive, the parents thrive. And school choice isn't just for students, it's also for teachers. There's a lot of people who I speak with who are former teachers who have started micro schools or private schools, or they're now homeschooling their own children. And they love it, and they're thriving because they have so much flexibility, and they can do the things that they always wanted to implement that, unfortunately, their hands were tied in the public system.
So I imagine those states that passed these programs, 75 programs, 30 plus states, also had to push back, the education unions I have a lot of faith and a lot of appreciation for our entire education system and teachers I know and love. Okay. I'm sure that those programs had to push back the opposition. What do you see in that? How long did it take? And then of those programs, are those negative consequences that we're worried about in Montana, have they materialized there?
In every state, they've all had to go through the court system. And, we can even talk about our community choice charter school law that's been enjoined. There's a partial pause on it. We're the 46th state to pass charter schools. They've all had to go through the court system, and they've all been found constitutional. We're confident that that bill will also be found constitutional here in the state. So unfortunately, it's kind of like the rite of passage when it comes to school choice programs and bringing education freedom. But the bottom line is that the future of education, K-12 education, is education freedom, is customization. It is allowing the funding to follow the student wherever to provide the exact and appropriate education that is right for that individual family and for those children.
Get outside the box, right, and think about education differently, and I think and manage those consequences. Yeah, I really like where it's going, and I know there's a pushback in a lot of places. I got just like a couple of minutes left here, not even that much. What else you got going on real quick?
Yeah, so just to let everybody know that there is, we have a Big Sky Scholarship Tax Credit that is going to be opening up its portal. So if you're thinking, like, we're probably thinking about 2025 taxes right now, but actually this is a way to get ahead for your 2026 taxes. So if you make a donation to a scholarship granting organization like ACE Scholarships, you can get a dollar-for-dollar tax credit that takes care of your tax liability. So say you owe the state of Montana $2,000 for your taxes. You can pay your taxes by giving money to a scholarship organization and scholarship a child to go to a private school while paying your taxes.
So, oh, really?
Absolutely. And you can get up to $200,000 of a tax credit. But, of course, if you don't have that tax liability, up to $200,000, right, that's fine. If you owe $50, you can give a $50 credit and then get that back on your taxes. So that is a fantastic program. There's more than $7 million of tax credits available this year. And those suckers, they max out within a couple hours every year. So that's coming up on the, January 21st. So if you want to make a donation and take care of your 2026 taxes, find yourself a lovely scholarship organization. You should check out ACE Scholarships and other organizations so that you can help students access private school.
Cheryl, good stuff. I appreciate that. Find out more. Reach out to Cheryl Tuskin, Tusken, frontierinstitute.org. Got to run here. I appreciate what you do, Cheryl. Have a happy new year, okay?
Great. Thanks. Same to you. Yep. Take care.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.